This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And almost 24 years ago, Bill Clinton signed off on the North American Free Trade Agreement, creating a trilateral free trade bloc between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada, repealing tariffs on goods shipped between the three countries. Since then, NAFTA, as it is known, has been criticized internationally for its neoliberal agenda of putting corporations before people. You know, a lot of people wonder the meaning of this neoliberal, that word neoliberal. I'll ask Laura Carlson, our guest, on that. In any case, what a lot of people remember about the launch of NAFTA was the Zapatistas in Chiapas in Mexico. The Zapatistas famously went public on the same day NAFTA began as part of criticizing the agreement and making their presence known. The deal has been a target of progressive people and, interestingly enough, of Donald Trump, who during the 2016 election called NAFTA catastrophic and the single worst trade deal ever approved in this country. Now the U.S., Mexico, and Canada are participating in private renegotiations of NAFTA. The first round of talks was held in Washington, D.C. in August. The second was held in Mexico City this month. But what will come out of these talks is up in the air, and there's a lot of fear that what Trump's team is bringing to the negotiating table perhaps is more of the same. The National Observer, U.S., arrived with text copied straight from the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's according to the National Observer. On Mexico's side, Trump has put pressure on the country due to the U.S.-Mexico trade deficit. That and other areas of conflicts, like Mexico's low wages, have been a point of debate thus far. Indeed, let us go to a clip from Al Jazeera about Mexican workers and how Mexico workers' rights are at the top of the agenda of NAFTA talks, or I think some would hope that's the case.
Mexico's salaries are the lowest in the international economic body, the OECD. So low that in the NAFTA renegotiations, the USA is complaining they mean unfair competition for its workforce. But why is that? For labor experts, this is a big part of the answer.
The reason salaries are low in Mexico is that there aren't any unions to regulate working conditions or fair pay.
In Mexico, labor experts say the vast majority of unions exist only on paper. They're known as protectionist or ghosts, set up and controlled by the very companies to which they should be a counterweight. Leo Reyes says that's the situation in the plant of Japanese firm Honda in western Mexico, where he's worked for 17 years.
When I started here, they made me join a union I never knew about. What does the union do for workers? Practically nothing. It's on the company's side. It takes no notice when we ask for higher salaries, and it lessens the benefits that we get.
Workers at the plant say they were fired for trying to form their own union. Honda didn't respond to our interview request. There are legislative efforts to curb ghost unions, but they're being resisted. And not just by companies, but the country's biggest confederation of unions itself, the CTM. Experts say it sticks up for firms rather than workers.
The CTM's first position was against raising the minimum salary. That doesn't happen anywhere in the world.
CTM leader Carlos Aceves wouldn't give Al Jazeera an interview. Even in the minority of Mexican unions which do defend the workforce, leaders are notorious for getting rich off membership quotas and backhanders from company contracts.
Whether it's from genuine unions, but with grasping leaders, or even worse, ghost unions, Mexican workers rarely get effective representation. And there's a certain irony that it's the administration of President Trump, an arch enemy for many Mexicans, that's trying to change that in the NAFTA renegotiations.
Of course, the U.S. administration has ulterior motives, but for labor experts, the outside intervention is still welcome.
The only thing we can thank President Trump for is the fact he's making us have a national debate over our economic model.
There's hope that pressure could force the Mexican government to deliver a better deal for the workforce.
What I'd like to do, though, is to welcome Laura Carlson, a regular here on Sojourner Truth, political analyst, journalist, writer based in Mexico. She's written extensively on NAFTA, the drug war, immigration, and gender issues in a number of outlets. Laura Carlson, welcome.
Thank you, Margaret.
Okay, so Laura, I know you've been following this, likely writing about this. Your thoughts now on how these renegotiations are going and what are the issues at stake?
Well, first of all, on the wage issue, which has become one of the most prominent issues in the second round of negotiations that ended in Mexico last week, I think, is that I completely agree with Donald Trump. I never thought I'd be saying that. But in this sense, the fact that Mexico has permitted low wages, and this is not as a result of market forces or the free market, as many would say, but as a result of artificially enforcing wages down, is really a very serious problem in trade relations. Not only does it mean that workers are not paid their due in Mexico, where the minimum wage is approximately $4 a day, not an hour a day, but it also means that corporations have this incentive to go to Mexico to move their production into Mexico to be able to take advantage of this cheap labor. Not only is it cheap labor, but because they have what they call contracts of protection contracts, which has also been a point that's been raised in the context of the negotiations, it means that workers don't have any real representation in many of these offshore assembly plants and in all other workplaces throughout the country as well. So we're in an interesting position where this has become an issue. Canada has made it an issue, and they've said, the unions have made it an issue as well, saying that there has to be an increase in wages in Mexico so that workers have a fair deal in the three countries, and that becomes a factor that enters into the trade negotiations themselves. Now, Mexico immediately said, no way, wage policy is an internal issue. They said, you can't set, there's no precedent for setting a wage level for another country in a trade agreement. But that response was a dodge, because, in fact, all that agreement has to say is that Mexico is required to fulfill its own labor laws in order to bring about a wage increase in Mexico, because the Constitution says that workers should be able to earn a decent living that provides for the basic necessities of both them and their families. And that hasn't been happening for many, many years in Mexico, especially since the age of NAFTA and slightly before then, when Mexico became a neoliberal country, which is to say it went to this economic model that put the emphasis on exports, that put the emphasis on opening up the economy to transnational corporations. There's been disastrous results to that. Within the negotiations, the wages have been a big issue. And there's also been issues on intellectual property and others. And so far, it looks like the talks are basically stalled. What they agreed to do is not talk about any issues that were really controversial and try to move forwards on others. But they're also saying that there's a lot of confusion and lack of movement in some ways from the Trump administration itself, which, of course, was the party that asked for this renegotiation, that they're not getting the text. And there's a lot of skepticism about whether they will be able to terminate these negotiations by the end of the year, which is what both the United States and Mexico want because of the electoral cycles in 2018.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, there's a lot of, you know, chatter around with, you know, Trump meeting with the Democrats and, you know, cutting various deals, it is said, with the Democrats and angering, you know, the Republicans, et cetera. And on the issue of NAFTA, there seemed to have been a kind of a coming together or an agreement among progressives and with Trump, with what he was saying, at least during the campaign, about NAFTA. In terms of what you're saying, though, about how the negotiations are going, was this basically rhetoric, right? Or is there a kind of an agreement between Trump and people who have opposed NAFTA? Laura, what's your view on this?
Margaret, that's a critical issue because it's been very confusing, I think, to a lot of people. And it is confusing. I think the first point is that you can't confuse a coincidence of positions, say, when two parties have the same position on an issue with agreement. Because the way we got there was entirely different. What Trump is saying as part of his anti-globalist current is that the United States lost in NAFTA, Mexico took advantage of NAFTA, we are going back to being the mightiest country by doing whatever we want in the world, you know. We don't have, you know, a deficit is proof that we lost, which economists completely argue against, and there's good reason to as well. And what the progressives have been saying, what we've been saying all along, is that, no, the problem here doesn't even have to do with national borders. The problem has to do with the fact that what this deal does is favor transnational corporations against small businesses, medium-sized businesses, and workers themselves. So you can see that the logic of the two is completely different, even though in the end, at this particular point, both renegotiation of NAFTA and particularly raising workers' wages, this happens to be something that we agree with. Now, what the Trump administration so far is putting on the table is, again, far different from what progressives have been wanting to renegotiate for almost since the beginning of NAFTA. Increased intellectual property rights and much of the stuff that's coming straight out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, because that's what they're bringing to the table on some issues. I disagree with National Observer that they actually brought, you know, a copy of TPP to negotiate there, and I think that has to do with trying to make sure that the globalists don't win out on the anti-globalists within the conservative factions. Mm-hmm. But they are bringing a lot of what was in the TPP there to the table, and that's certainly not what progressives want. We defeated it in the United States, and we're not going to let it slip back in to a NAFTA renegotiation. Intellectual property, increased intellectual property, is nothing more than delivering monopolies to transnational corporations that are already competing in an unfair manner, because free trade is anything but. It's a series of subsidies from the state, from public resources. It's a series of monopoly and concentration mechanisms that have created a situation in which these transnational corporations can come in and take advantage of cheap labor and of natural resources in any part of the world. So the whole myth that this is a battle of one country against another, that the nationalists in the Trump administration and even before Trump have been putting forward, is just that. It's a false narrative that's designed to convince workers, as we saw in the elections, that this kind of an economic nationalism and a candidate like Donald Trump could actually be in their interest.
Right, right. Well, we're going to have to come back to this really important negotiations. We really appreciate, Laura, you breaking it down for us. And one has to wonder, too, about the impact increasingly as the U.S. has to deal with a multipolar world, with the U.S. not really just running everything on the one hand, and, you know, just also just the response of movements to all of this and the race to the bottom, because at the time that NAFTA was there, you know, there's all the concern about corporations going to where the lowest wages are. And I remember there were a wave of businesses that left Mexico and went to places like China. And then when they left China and going to a place like Vietnam, where wages are even lower. And then some are saying, well, some are coming back to Mexico. So that race to the bottom is still going on. So we have to keep a close eye on all of this, Laura. So we appreciate you and thank you for joining us.
And of course, they are keeping a close eye. You're talking to me now from El Salvador, where there's a big meeting going on the effect of Trump in Central America. And if CAFTA could be involved in some way, which is highly unlikely, there hasn't been talk about that. But this concerns not just people in the United States, what's happening, but it's just amazing to see how worried people throughout the world are about this Trump administration, its unpredictability, and its aggressiveness in many ways.
Right.
So we'll be watching that.
Yeah. So hopefully you'll be able to come back on and give us a bit more info on that. Thank you, Laura. Safe travels.